Welcome to episode 109 of Comic Timing, a comics podcast devoted to the average comic book fan from the average comic book fan. Joined in as Brent Cassino, rotating panel of guests, and myself, Ian Levinson, discuss whatever comes to mind, time after time, here on Comic Timing. Are the DVDs out yet for Kick-Ass and Iron Man 2? No? Well, then consider this early. Yeah, you heard me. We're not late on Iron Man 2 and Kick-Ass. We're early. Think about it that way. Your life will be simpler. Here now, Comic Timing. Hey there, folks. My name's Ian Levinson, and welcome to episode 109 of Comic Timing. So before episode 108 is even been edited, we're recording 109 to stay ahead of the bump. That's the way we roll. And joining us live, Mr. Work All Night and Sleep All Day, Brent Cassino. What's going on, Brent?
What? Are you getting me up for this?
I'm too old for this shit.
How'd you get a hold of my computer? Why am I over here in my Sesame Street boxers? What the? How'd you do this, man?
Oh, you too, huh? can you tell me how to get to working on planes?
Go to school for 5 years, get an engineering degree, work your ass off, and then get really lucky.
If you can pronounce on engineering, that is.
Yeah, that's the first thing.
But other than that, you're doing great, huh?
Other than that, absolutely.
Good. And joining us on this episode of Comic Timing for the first time, and it's hard to believe it's the first time because he's been podcasting a while, and he's younger than all of us, Mr. Alec Berry of the Teenage Wasteland and of the what's the other one?
Matinee Idols,
yeah.
Matinee Idols. Woo.
What's going on, Alec?
Not much. I just woke up like 20 minutes ago, just like the rest of us. So hopefully my mind.
I heard that 20 minutes ago.
I think you did, but hopefully my mind's gonna work today. And I'm kind of just sitting back. I woke up this morning and see that the comics internet is burning up because of digital pricing, but that's a whole other thing.
Oh, really?
So.
I haven't actually checked. What's the word?
The whole Iron Man thing they're releasing at the same day as print. I guess it's going to actually cost more in digital, and everybody's pissy about that.
Yeah, because they're putting it out in chapters for people who don't know any better.
Yeah. So. Oh well.
Whatever. I'll continue to get my singles until I eventually switch to trade, as I mentioned on the last episode, and then maybe if I wind up getting an iPad eventually, I'll start going digital. But that'll be a while from now.
See what happens. I don't know. Just like I said, just kind of funny watching everybody argue. That's the thing I like.
Well, I doubt there'll be much arguing on this episode, as we're talking two movies that were pretty good. Kick-Ass and Iron Man 2. You know, now that everybody has talked about it, I figure it's about damn time that we talk about it. And that's usually the way things go.
As Wood says, we are always like a year behind in events.
So yeah, on this episode, we're going to be talking about the first Hellboy movie and Batman Begins, this new flick that Christopher Nolan put out. I wonder if it's any good.
You know, I don't think we ever did the Hellboy 2 review we were supposed to do 2 years ago.
No, we didn't.
We should do that now. We should just bring that up.
This second.
Yeah, because all we did was talk about it, that we were going to do it, talk about that we were going to do it, and then we didn't wind up actually doing it. We didn't do Wanted either.
Did we?
I don't know.
I thought we did Wanted.
Oh, yeah. The Wanted special that we did. Okay, it wasn't an actual episode.
Yeah.
It was one of those small ones. But yeah, Iron Man 2 and Kick-Ass, before the DVDs come out, we'll be talking about. And it's not going to be a typical review. It's more going to be, our thoughts and opinions and then maybe branching out into...
Isn't that a review?
Quiet you. well, we'll be trying to spice things up a little bit here and there. But we'll start things off with Kick-Ass, since that was the first one to come out, and then we'll roll over to Iron Man 2. Now, Kick-Ass, a little bit different than the original book that it was based on, but still more of a based on a graphic novel thing that Iron Man 2 had going forward, as we mentioned last episode a little bit, as Iron Man 2 was pretty much an original story, but just happened to be about Iron Man. Here we are with Kick-Ass, which is definitely based on the Kick-Ass graphic novel, the first one that came out. Second one's coming out in a few months. And how does it compare? We'll start with that first. Alec, did you read Kick-Ass before you watched it? And how does it compare?
Oh, you're asking the wrong guy. I haven't even touched the book yet.
Okay, good.
I missed the singles when they came out. I really wasn't paying attention. And I don't know, they still haven't really even put it out in a trade paperback at this point. So I'm just kind of waiting for that to come out. I definitely want to read it at some point because it's John Romita Jr. Mm-hmm. And I'm a pretty big JR fan, but no, I haven't even touched the book yet. So the movie was my first exposure.
Okay. And yeah, the hardcover's out, but I think the trade is still like sitting in limbo as to when the hell they're actually going to get that shit out.
Limbo.
Which I think that was a pretty big mess up, I think, on Marvel's part. Like, they could have sold a lot of that. I was pretty mad about that because I wanted to read it before I saw the movie and right. I see there's no trade.
Okay,
like,
Peter Rios, just cancel your whole fucking episode about it. Just because it's not available for reorder and there's still a shit ton of copies in comic stores, okay, Peter Rios.
Well, maybe I would have read it. Maybe I would have read it if they had it. I don't know. It just pissed me off.
Well, the hardcover was what, $22 or something like that?
Yeah, but I don't want a hardcover.
How about the hardcover?
So do you have the hardcover, Brent?
What? Not on me, but yeah, I did read it before the movie came out.
Okay, well, how does it compare for you?
I like the movie a lot better.
Okay. So you enjoy the changes that were made in the movie, because there were a bunch of cosmetic changes and, and story changes.
I thought the movie was... It's just more entertaining. I mean, a Mark Miller comic is a Mark Miller comic is a Mark Miller comic. Mm-hmm. So in that vein, it was kind of like stuff I've read before. But, I mean, when I read like two of the single issues when they came out, the first two. And when I read those, I was like, okay, wow, you know, this is kind of shocking. Or I can see it was pushing the line a little bit. But reading it all at once, it was kind of like, okay. I mean, it's not bad, but it's not the best story in the world. But, you know, it made for a great movie, mm-hmm. which is the best praise I can give it.
Right. Yeah. Well, Chris actually wound up seeing the movie and then reading the comic book, as she hadn't. And I happened to have all eight issues just lying around, so I just handed it to her. And she prefers parts of the comic over the movie and parts of the movie over the comic. But the specific change that I much rather prefer in the comic book than in the movie, and this might be spoiling it a little bit for you, Alec, but too bad.
Doesn't matter.
In the comic, he doesn't get the girl. When he reveals, well, he doesn't actually reveal that he's kick-ass to her in the comic either, so those are the two major changes. But when he reveals that he's not gay to her, he gets punched in the face. And that's sort of where the comic book ends. You know, I mean, he goes into his, you know, monologue about how, you know, things suck and yet things are still good because I'm kick-ass, yada, yada, yada. And then we see the last scene with the widow they get a load of me. But he doesn't get the girl. And that I much rather prefer.
Yeah, I would agree with you. I think that sounds a lot more interesting than just kind of the, you know, typical, like, oh, I'm superhero, so I'm going to get laid kind of thing. And he gets lucky. I don't know. I don't know. Yeah, I go with you on that one.
So is that a movie trope that you don't really enjoy? The whole I'm the main character, so I need to get the girl?
Yeah, I mean, obviously it's a cliche. I mean, I don't have a problem with it. It's not like every time I see that in a movie, I just get angry. It's like, oh, they should have done something different. But yeah. I don't know. I thought the way this movie was going and watching it, I thought like, I mean, it's not like I was pissed when he got the girl. Mm-hmm. It's just now that you kind of told me like in the book he didn't. And now I think about that, it's like, that actually might have been a little more interesting.
Yeah. Well, because he's the nerd.
I liked him getting the girl.
Yeah,
I liked it.
Yeah, I mean, I liked it too.
The girl. Like,
it was cool. I mean, I'm not saying it's not. Like, it was kind of, you got some cool scenes out of it and some funny stuff. But mm-hmm. now that Ian kind of brings it up and I think about it, it's like, oh, you know, that might have been interesting to see too, him not get the girl.
Well, think about it. Their entire relationship was based on a lie at first, you know, because he gets into her life by saying, inferring that he's gay, and then, you know, she's all like, oh my god, I've wanted a gay boyfriend my entire life, yay, this is great, you can paint my nails and give me massages and all this stupid shit. And first off, if that's the way that you're gonna treat the one gay guy that you know, you're going a little bit overboard there. But, you know, he was the guy who, you know, sat down and took it, so whatever. But
he was seeing boobies.
Yes, he was seeing boobies. That is true.
There you go.
That part was awesome with the lotion on her back.
Yeah.
Like, oh, man.
I was like, why can't I be in that scene?
Exactly.
I'll just switch places with that dude. Yeah, I know.
Beautiful girl.
But seriously, though, their entire relationship based on a lie, and she's just perfectly okay with it. What's up with that?
Yeah. I was asking kind of the same question. I'm like, that's kind of weird. You know, this dude lies to you the whole time. And then it's like, oh, it's okay. Because, mm-hmm. you know, you're kick-ass. Whatever. I don't know. But like Brent said, it was kind of fun once they got together. And you got some funny scenes of them hanging out in the comic shop. So again,
they had sex outside of a comic book shop. When does that happen? I don't know.
You should ask people who work at Midtown Comics or Jim Hanley's. Maybe they've seen it a few times. I don't know.
Raph? Where's Raph?
Oh, God, no. No. That's not where I was going, man. That's not where I was going. bad touch. Now I need to go wash my eyes out with soap. I'll see you guys later.
Sorry, sir.
But there's not much of an alleyway for Midtown Comics, so you can't really do that.
That's true.
It's on the second floor. It's difficult. But all right. And how comic book did it feel for you, Alec? I mean, you know, this is a movie based on a comic book. Did it feel like you were watching a comic book on screen?
Yeah, I mean, obviously they kind of did the things where they put like the meanwhile little captions over the top. They kind of visually, I think they did try to bring the comic book appeal. But I kind of think in like the actual tone of the movie, I didn't really feel the comic book thing. Mm-hmm. I felt at some points when you were actually in the action and the violence, but kind of the second you stepped out of that, it almost just felt like it was kind of another raunchy comedy to me.
Okay.
So I would say visually, yeah, it had that comic book appeal to me, but I think in the tone of it, not all the time.
All right. Okay. What about you, Brent?
I thought the tone of Nick Cage definitely brought the comic book appeal.
Yeah. Yeah.
Fucking Burt Ward, Adam West all the way. I was like,
that was the best part of the whole fucking movie was just Nick Cage.
Nick Cage was cool, but I did not get the Adam West thing. I really didn't get it.
I thought that was awesome. I mean, like he has the Christian Bale Batman suit on, but he's doing the Adam West voice. I just thought that was like fucking perfect.
It was more of the Keaton Batman suit than anything, I thought.
Did he have the nipples on the suit?
Well, that would have been three movies later with Mr. ER. That wouldn't have been Keaton. Yeah,
might be.
Yeah, but for him specifically, he just wiped every single horrible memory I have of Ghost Rider out of my head.
Yeah.
This one movie.
He was just playing great in this movie. He wasn't playing great in Ghost Rider.
Yeah, he was playing as we've put it multiple times, the functional retard. Put the monkey back on. There were no scenes like that. He just had to yell, child.
I just like Crazy Nick Cage is like better than anything. Like you can put an Oscar worthy performance up against Crazy Nick Cage. I'm going with Crazy Nick Cage any day.
That's
what we saw in this movie. It's in like Bad Lieutenant, which also came out this year. It's mm-hmm. like. There's nothing better than Crazy Nick Cage.
I love it. And he's a comic book fan himself, as you know, because he's the crazy motherfucker that named his kid Kal-El.
Cage. My name is Cage. Kal-El Cage.
I mean, he's a Coppola, and he changed his name to Cage because he likes Luke Cage as a kid.
Wow.
Yeah. That's his backstory. Well, that
he should be Luke Cage in the Avengers movie.
The white Nick Luke Cage.
it'll be like Robbie Downey Jr. He'll put on the blackface. He'll go through the special treatment to get his skin all black.
That would be great.
No, it wouldn't.
That would be awesome. I mean, I was already gonna see Avengers, but if you're having Nick Cage play a black man with unbreakable skin, I'm definitely gonna watch it.
Yeah, just not Luke Cage.
No, have him play Luke Cage. I think that'd be great.
Oh, dear God.
They could cover him in blackface.
Yeah, man. Robert Downey Jr. style. Tropic Thunder.
Yeah, no.
I'd take it. I'd see it.
Well, the thing about Nick Cage, which is interesting, is that he was originally going to play the wrestler in The Wrestler. And they wound up going with... you know, the guy who was in Iron Man 2 instead, Mickey Rourke. And that you know, that could have very well changed Nick Cage's career a little bit. You know, a little bit more of a serious role, perhaps getting the Golden Globe nominations and the Oscar nominations and everything. But I'm kind of happy that didn't happen. Because
yeah, but who's to say Nick Cage wouldn't have totally blown that role?
Right. Yeah, that's also a possibility, you know, because, I mean, yeah, he could have pulled it off and been amazing. Or he could have, you know, failed miserably to be the same sort of character that Mickey Rourke was. But if you win the Golden Globes and you're nominated for the Oscar and everything, you don't wind up playing the Adam West-esque character in Kick-Ass, I'm pretty sure. I think Nick Cage's career would have gone elsewhere. Mickey Rourke, however, I can perfectly see in Iron Man 2 after The Wrestler because he's Mickey Rourke. You know, he should just be happy that he still has a career. You know, that's what The Wrestler was for him. That was
him getting
back. Right, that was him getting back. Nick Cage was already Nick Cage, even if people just laughed at him.
Yeah, but I don't know. I think Nick Cage has kind of had some better films this past year than he has, like, in most recent times. Like, again, you had this Kick-Ass appearance, and I mentioned Bad Lieutenant before. Like, if you've seen that movie, he's great in that movie, too.
I haven't actually seen that.
You need to watch that. It's so crazy that it's just awesome.
What's it about?
You ever seen the original Bad Lieutenant with Harvey Keitel?
No, I never have.
It's pretty much just about – it's right there in the name – Nick Cage is a lieutenant in, like, New Orleans. He's a cop, mm-hmm. and he's really just corrupt, and, like, he does drugs and deals drugs and all this stuff. And you really just kind of watch his character throughout this 2 hours and all the crazy stuff.
Is Eva Mendes naked in it?
Actually, yeah, at one point. So you've got that going for it, too.
I'm in.
But, yeah, there you go. That's all you need. But it's just pretty much watching him go crazy and stuff for 2 hours. But it's really – it's actually really well done. It's a great movie. I'd recommend that.
And it's Nick Cage and Eva Mendes again.
Exactly.
Only this time.
Making up for last time.
Yeah. Only this time there are no functional retards. God damn it, I'm not going to stop bringing that up.
It's much better than Ghost Rider, I promise you that.
I thought we were talking about Kick-Ass.
We are. Let's get back to it.
We are, but then again...
we're talking about Nick Cage, he's awesome.
Yeah, but then again, Batman and Robin was better than Ghost Rider, so, you know, that doesn't really say much. All right, the action scenes. This movie was all about over-the-top action. And some moments were a little bit more believable than others, but, you know, you sort of had to, like, throw your belief out the window with Kick-Ass, especially when, you know, a rocket blows a guy out a window. That was
awesome.
Oh, no, it was brilliant. Yeah. It's just, you know, there are certain things that will never happen in real life, but whatever, this is a movie we're talking about.
You didn't like the jetpack with the Gatling guns a la War Machine?
The jetpack was awesome.
I like the jetpack in principle because, you know, him in a jetpack and just being, oh my God, I'm wearing a jetpack was pretty cool, you know, and then actually using it for something important. Also nice, you know. Yeah, complete change from the movie there. I mean, from the comic there, but who cares, you know, because that was a freaking jetpack. But were there any points in the movie that you felt the action was too over the top, Brent?
No, I mean, I thought it would have been over the top if they had put in the part in the comic where they're electrocuting his balls rather than just beating him. I thought that would have been a little much, so I'm kind of glad that wasn't in there.
Plus, we didn't have to watch him, you know, hurt his balls.
Right.
That would have been painful for everybody in the theater, right. I believe.
But the rest of it I was fine with because it had that humorous tone in the movie. In the action, it was kind of humorous. Mm-hmm. I'm surprised they toned down... I mean, when Hit Girl first showed up in the drug dealer spot, mm-hmm. they really toned the violence down in there. I mean, she only cut off, like, two limbs, and that's it. In the comic, she literally slices everybody to pieces.
Yeah.
So, I mean, they kept it believable, I guess. You wouldn't – I think if she had sliced everybody to ribbons, then people might have gotten really disgusted and just walked out. Rather as the one guy who got his leg cut off and everybody else gets stabbed. I mean, it's a little more not acceptable, but you can take it, I guess.
So do you think that they played it safe with Hit Girl?
No, I don't think they played it safe at all. I mean,
yeah.
You had one of the most respected critics in the country calling it absolute dribble,
yeah.
Roger Ebert. I don't think they played it safe at all. They went as far as they thought they could go.
Yeah. They had her say the C word.
Yes.
That was awesome.
Yes, they had her say cunt. No, we're going to say it on this episode.
Oh, we're saying it, all right.
Yeah. Because God damn it, what's the big deal? That's really my reaction to that. You know, like, yes, she's you know 10 years old, whatever, but she's playing a role. And
right. But you had that kid in Role Models, you know, cursing up the little black kid.
Yeah.
Who's you know saying this bitch shit nigga fuck cunt. You know, that whole Blink-182 song where they sample the cuss words. He said every movie in that word, and nobody gave a damn because he's a cute little funny black kid.
Right.
Where you get a little white girl saying it, and then it's all, oh, no, I can't have this. It's like, is a little bit of a double standard.
Yeah, I was just going to say, no, it's totally a double standard, because people don't seem to realize this, at least the critics don't seem to realize this. Chloe Moretz asked for this role, okay? She went to her agent when she saw Wanted, when she saw ads for Wanted, and said, I want to be in something this badass. You know, give me something where I will be able to be the action star, you know, because I really want to do this. This looks so cool. I totally want to do this. And enter Kick-Ass. That's the perfect role for her right there, you know? I mean, she didn't want to be stuck in the you know, little sister roles until she gets older. You know, she wanted to break out of that. And that's exactly what she was able to do here with Kick-Ass. I mean, you agree, Alec?
Yeah, I mean, she was in 500 Days of Summer previously, and I like kind of seeing her go from that kind of cute little girl with a little bit of a snarky attitude to this, where she's totally just kicking ass and being a badass character. Mm-hmm. So I definitely agree with that. She definitely broke out in that. But to kind of go back to the question previously, do I think the violence was overdone in this? No, I don't think it was whatsoever. I think that was kind of the point of a lot of those action scenes, was, again, to have this little girl and make it very sort of just out there, to kind of have her committing all of these crazy acts of violence.
Right.
So that didn't bug me whatsoever. That was kind of the point of it, I thought.
Well, yeah, and that was the same thing for me too, because I mean, this was a world that was, you know, our world only, and our world little girls kick ass. You know, that's just it. You know, because yeah, there were some parts of this that were a little bit less believable, with the whole, you know, if superheroes really existed, quote-unquote superheroes, because nobody actually really has powers in this, but, you know, if people dressed up in masks, would they be vigilantes? Would they do whatever it took to get the job done, or would they let the police come in afterwards? And the answer to this is no, they'd all be the Punisher. And that makes perfect sense to me. You know, in our world today, the old school leaving someone tied up in webs and waiting for the cops to come isn't nearly as effective as cut off someone's finger and possibly their head. You know, this might be the way that I mean, yeah, that's vigilante justice, but that's what this movie's all about. It's vigilante justice. So, yeah, I might have just, you know, just said that I'm perfectly fine with vigilante justice. But, yeah, I am in a movie setting. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, that's the universe that the thing takes place in. Those are the rules. That's what it goes by.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm not really going to question that, because, oh, it's not realistic. It's not, you know, the set way. That's not how it should be. No, that's the story it's telling. That's what I'm going to let it be.
Right.
And I think it did a nice job of it.
Yeah, I agree. And I was perfectly fine with Hit Girl also. I mean, I felt that this was pretty much dead on the character that was in the comics. I mean, yeah, there were a couple changes here and there, but nothing that was detrimental to the character. You know, I mean the scene where she's you know, asking for a kitty, you know, that was played off perfectly, you know.
I'm just fucking with you, daddy.
and Chloe Moretz had to actually learn how to flip butterfly knives to play this part, okay?
That was awesome.
It was brilliant.
Wow.
I love that. You know, everything about this movie was perfect here, including Big Daddy, which actually I felt came off better here than in the comic.
He wasn't really in the comic, though. I mean, he was in it, but his part was so minuscule and small that, you know, there wasn't anything to it. And the other thing about the comic Big Daddy that I did not like is his whole motivation, which was, in the comic, there was none. He carried around a big suitcase, and it's like, what's in the suitcase? What's in the suitcase? What's in the suitcase? And it was a bunch of, like, old CGC-graded comic books that was funding his operation.
Yeah.
And basically it came down to, he wanted to be a superhero. He was a superhero because he wanted to be, because he was a comic book nerd, just like the rest of us. Not, oh, like what they had in the movie was a much better motivation. Cliche as it was, is a much better motivation for Big Daddy and Hit Girl, that, you know, this mobster had affected their family and stuff like that. So
yeah, well, the fake origin that he gave in the Kick-Ass comic is his actual origin in this movie, which I found to be pretty cool, you know, because, you know, they explained, like, his past at one point in the comic, and then we find out, no, the past is bullshit. He's just some geek with some comic books who wanted to be a vigilante. And here we learn, yeah, he was a geeky cop, but he was still a cop. And that's why he, you know, went to the the realms that he did. And yeah, him winding up with the, you know, I mean, in the end, Hikaru winding up with his former partner, I thought was pretty cool because he actually had a former partner in this one. You know, it made sense. While in the comic, I know that that the mother wasn't actually isn't actually dead in the comic, and that you know that she winds up with the cop actually in the comic book, but only because the cop gets with the mom. So all the shit that we learned about Big Daddy in the comic wasn't actually the case. So I'm perfectly okay with those changes in the movie. I think it works a hell of a lot better.
Plus, I mean, if you would have tried to have done the fake past and then sort of a reveal later, I don't think you would have had time for that in a movie.
Right.
Whereas, you know, have 8 issues of the comic book to do it. So, yeah, I'd agree with you. It seems like it would work better.
Well, right. And then and we would have had Big Daddy dragging around this big case the entire time, wondering what it is, what it is,
That's just another plot thread to solve, too, and waste time on. So.
Right. Come on. Yeah. And the cosmetic changes as well for Big Daddy in this, you know, making him more of a Batman light looking thing, I think really worked well for the character, especially when he's using that overbearing Batman voice while talking. I mean, I'm sure Nick Cage was having a good time because, you know, he was living out his superhero fantasies without having a skull head. Yes, I will mention it again. You know, he was being able to be as much over the top as possible because that was the character. The character was over the top.
And that scene with him where he busts into the warehouse and just has that, like, shotgun and takes out, like, 10 people, that was the best scene in that entire movie.
Oh, yeah.
Say it right. That was such an awesome scene, just the pacing of that scene. It just kicks so much ass. No pun intended.
No pun intended.
Pun intended. All right. I don't know. If you guys have any thoughts on that scene, just please send them.
No. I love the cinematography on that scene, too. I felt was great because you know we're seeing it from every single angle and you know being able to almost like feel the bullets go through people was pretty damn awesome there. I loved that scene myself. Just in general, they made Big Daddy menacing even while being a nerd. You know, and that's what was good about that. And that was good about the scene, too, because, you know, he actually has training. You could see that. He didn't just self-train himself in this movie. You know, he's got his police training. He's got everything else in there. And that allows him to be able to break in and well, you know, bust some heads when need be. I mean, Brent, your take?
I thought he was a lot more menacing. What I liked about the film was that... One thing that the one difference from the comic book that I really liked was that you knew that Red Menace was a bad guy the whole time.
Yeah,
I thought it was a lot more effective that he was teaming up with his dad to get Kick-Ass, and then here you saw the origin of the Red Mist right in front of your eyes, rather than in the comic book. Oh, here's the Red Mist. He's barely in it for 2 seconds. They team up one time. And then, oh my God, he's the bad guy's son. It was kind of like, okay, well, you could have done that a lot better, Mark Miller, but I thought the movie did it really well.
No, the movie leaps and bounds on Red Mist, yeah, because I don't know, like I could tell from the start that Red Mist was going to be a villain just because of the way that he came off. Like, he was almost like, you know, too good to be true and, you know, smoking the weed and everything, but whatever, in the comic. But you're right, he was there for like 5 scenes or something like that. I mean, you don't actually get an emotional attachment to him. So to change it up where you do know from the start exactly what Red Mist deal is going to be, while still at the same time knowing that he kind of likes Kick-Ass and he doesn't really mind him that much. And when he finds out that, you know, it's actually Big Daddy and Hit Girl they should be going after, you know, he tries to get his dad not to go after Kick-Ass, but it's too late because his dad's already gone off the deep end and getting rid of Kick-Ass is just going to make things a lot easier for him because, yeah, what does happen if Kick-Ass does go after him at some point? So, yeah, I felt that Red Mist was a lot better in the movie than anywhere else. And I mean, Alec, I know you've only seen the movie, but knowing from the start what Red Mist deal is that better than, you know, him just showing up and then having to assume whether he's a good guy or a bad guy?
Yeah, I would say it is, just for the fact that, again, you get to watch him throughout this entire time. I mean, if you know what he's going to be in the end, you can kind of see, I think it's easier to see that sort of that arc he's going to go through, mm-hmm. as you actually watch it happen, knowing what's coming. rather than if you got to the end, you thought this guy was a cool guy the whole time, and then, oh, no, he's a bad guy. Then it's kind of like, okay, then you're thinking, you know, where did this change come from? And that, to me, would really kind of take me out of it almost. I just think, you know, it's some lazy writing, you know, the way I would take it. It's like, oh, they just want to slip him in as a bad guy. Mm-hmm. But to have, you know, knowing that, having that knowledge the whole time and getting to watch this character kind of go through the process of becoming, you know, the bad guy at the end, I think it works a lot better because, again, it doesn't feel like lazy writing. You feel like there's a journey there for the character.
Well, yeah, and we also, you know, the journey is that, you know, yeah, he might start out liking Kick-Ass, but in the end, Kick-Ass is the one that kills his dad.
Yeah.
You know, so of course, there you go. Bam, you've got that vengeance angle going. So, of course, he's going to become a villain because that's the way comic books work, and that's the way that, you know, superhero, supervillain things work. You know, you got to have the motivation to hate somebody. And by the end of the movie, he has that motivation, even if he didn't at the start.
Since they're set up for a sequel, and if you go into a sequel, if they do another movie, I don't know how much money it made in the finale of it, but... You know, then you don't have to kind of do a, you know, this is what happened last time. You kind of already know that, you know, there's a history here between Kick-Ass and Red Mist. You don't have to say, you know, if he just showed up at the end as a villain and you're like, oh, well, how did that happen? Then you'd have to start the second movie explaining why he became the villain.
Right. Well,
I saved all that time.
I don't think this is going to be like the Golden Compass. I don't think this is going to be something that didn't do well enough to get, you know, sequels after that, even though there is more story to be told, because I know it did well overseas and it did make back its money. So, yeah. So that's the most important thing there. I mean, I certainly do want to see sequels. I mean, I know that the second comic book series starts coming out in August, if memory serves. So the first issue of that comes out. So, you know, I mean, at least we'll hopefully this time around not have to wait nearly as long to have the conclusion of the comic book series. Because, I mean, I don't know if you know the history of the comic book as much as I do, but we had to wait, like, God, how many months until the last issue came out, Brent? What was it, like, at least eight, right?
Trade and stopped counting.
Okay. You just went trade? Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hardcover, excuse me.
Okay. Well, they had the movie sold, I think, before, like, the second issue was even complete.
Well, yeah, yeah.
That was the big deal around this whole project, and what was so interesting about it, I thought, is just the way it kind of came about to be a film. Mm-hmm. I think it's gonna, I don't know, I think this is going to be kind of the precedence for a lot of creator-owned comics in the upcoming years. The guys that are kind of, you know, interested in eventually getting that movie deal. I think this is going to be kind of like, you know, this is the ultimate goal. Kick-Ass is the ultimate goal. That's, you want to be the next Kick-Ass. I think that's the most interesting thing about all this.
Well, I mean, like with Scott Pilgrim, I mean, the Scott Pilgrim movie is just going to be all the books, and the ending is going to be different because they had to start filming the movie before the last Scott Pilgrim book came out. You know, so that's just the way that's going to happen. With Kick-Ass here, yeah, there were changes and stuff like that, but I don't think that was more on the comic book, you know, being finished. I think that was just movie changes that needed to be made. But it's just what pisses me off a little bit is that, yeah, you make your deal on the second issue. You know it's going to be a movie and all that, but they came dangerously close to having the movie come out before the comic book finishes. And it's an eight-issue story, you know, that it started at least 2 years before the movie came to be. So, what the hell?
I mean, Mark Miller appears to me to be that guy. I think he's just kind of, he's that step away from Hollywood. And I think the second he kind of gets that connection, he's going to go for it. I mean, honestly, look at myself in that position and maybe you yourself. Mm-hmm. Okay, if you had the choice to put out this comic book or really work on this feature film, which one are you going to put the time towards first? I'm probably going to go with the movie as well.
Yeah.
And I think that's really what happened in this whole situation. Plus, John Romita Jr. himself, too. I mean, he did a lot of illustration work for the movie, a lot of design stuff, too. So kind of both of their attentions were diverted from it.
Yeah, and that animated segment took just about the length of the filming of the movie to actually finish.
Yeah, which that's the one complaint I'd have about the movie. Along with one other thing, which I'll ask here in a second. But I didn't like that whole animated thing. I didn't think that turned out that well in the end. I don't even think it was finished, was it?
No, it was finished. It was finished.
I think I heard
it. I was more disappointed that it took that's what John Romita Jr. was working on rather than the comic book.
Like, I would have rather they would have just taken the actual comic book pages and kind of put them into the movie instead of doing that animated thing.
Well, you know? they were experimenting. I mean, you know, they wanted to try and have like a motion comic thing going, only have it be maybe a little bit more refined than that. And you know, in certain aspects it worked, in other aspects not so much. But yeah, it wasn't exactly that necessary. I mean, they wanted to have a comic book element. I would have been fine with it just being still images myself.
Mm-hmm. I think that would have been the way to go. But the one question I did want to ask you guys about this, overall, like, I had a good time watching this movie. I was entertained. I was into it in the action sequences and all that stuff. But then when I got out of the movie, I just kind of kept thinking, in the end, like, what was this movie about necessarily? Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, what was the kind of the point? What was it trying to get across? Like, I understand the comic book is kind of about that whole, like, you know, what if people could really be superheroes, that whole thing. And I think this movie kind of went into that a little bit, but then it kind of seemed like it shifted to something else. I couldn't figure out what exactly this movie was going for. And I think
it was a revenge story at the very end. When you boil it down, it was a revenge story. Whereas the comic book, I think at all times, was purely a what if real people did this, because you had that, you know, you had Big Daddy's motivation there where he was just a nerd too. So,
yeah.
Well, and part of it might be that the comic book was pretty much the story of Kick-Ass, while I think the movie was more the story of Hit-Girl and Big Daddy than anything else.
They were at least more interesting than Kick-Ass, I think. I think they were... I would have rather seen the whole movie kind of been on them at points. Like, it kind of was weird that the movie is entitled after this character, and I don't know, he wasn't actually that interesting to me most of the time.
Well, people say the same thing about the first Batman Begins. The first Batman movie, Batman Begins, that Batman wasn't exactly as interesting as Ra's al Ghul, you know, or even the first Batman movie, the Burton Batman, where Joker was the star, basically. You know, it wasn't a Batman story, it was more of a Joker story. So that seems to be a problem. Well, not necessarily
it's
a problem.
Like, that's kind of the thing with most superhero movies now that I actually think about it and you bring that up. It's right. Kind of the case where the villains are always interesting.
Yeah.
That's a good point.
But do you need a villain to be more interesting than the hero in order for a comic book movie to be good? I don't know. I mean, that's the question that I'll throw out there.
That is a good question.
Because think about it. Spider-Man 2.
I don't think you need it, because, I mean, if you look at the Iron Man movies, which we'll talk about here soon, like, whenever I'm watching those movies aren't necessarily, like, very villain... The villains in those movies aren't necessarily really exciting. I'm more actually interested in Tony Stark, even more interested in Tony Stark than I am sometimes Iron Man when he's in the armor.
Right.
So I would say I don't think you need an exciting villain necessarily to have a successful comic book movie.
Okay. Yeah.
I think the problem with this movie, going on what you're saying about interesting villains, is that for the, you know, the first 45 minutes of the film, we were attached to Kick-Ass. You know, Aaron Johnson, Dave Lazowski, who, and we didn't even talk about Aaron Johnson in this movie. I think he's fucking awesome.
Yeah.
Just hilarious. I mean, if you heard the guy talk in real life, you'd be like, he sounds like Mark Millar. You can't understand a word he's saying. But, you know, in this movie, you understood completely what he was saying. He had that little bit of girlish voice, like his balls hadn't dropped yet, you know, still in puberty, whole kind of thing. I thought that was a very nice touch. But, you know, we're attached to him for the first 45 minutes, and we had that. You know, he was the hero of our story, and, you know, that's who we were interested in. But as soon as Big Daddy and Red Mist and all these other things in the movie came in, we suddenly shifted our focus to this revenge tale of Big Daddy versus the mobster, and Kick-Ass kind of became like a backseat of that. Yeah. Because his whole journey kind of completes in that first 45 minutes. You know, he becomes a hero. He loses. He has that battle of becoming a hero and stuff. He's in the hospital, and, you know, he survives that first battle in the parking lot of the diner with the Prodigy music going, the big techno fight and all this other stuff. You know, he gets the girl, he's rubbing stuff on her back, and then, you know, he gets laid, and then the movie kind of shifts, and so that's kind of the end of the hero film. And then it kind of shifts from there midstream into the revenge flick with the other characters. So I think that was the biggest issue, is that his journey ended too soon in the film.
I could see that. I could certainly agree with that.
I mean, I love the way the movie went, but as far as, you know, that's why we're still talking about Big Daddy and Hit Girl, and that's why most people talked about coming out of the movie was Big Daddy and Hit Girl.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's because of that reason, because the hero's journey ended in the film really, really soon, whereas in the comic it was always about Dave Lazowski, and the other characters were secondary characters like they were supposed to have been.
Well, I guess they wanted more of the action to be the element in this movie than it was in the comic book, and in order to do that, I think you're going to have to focus on Big Daddy and Hit Girl a little bit more than you focus on Kick-Ass, because, well, they are the action element.
Yeah, they're delivering it.
Right.
They're kicking the ass rather than Kick-Ass himself.
Right, yeah, because Kick-Ass is just a kid. You know, yeah, he might be able to kick people in the nads and hit people with a pipe a couple times, but, you know, he's not trained or anything. You know, he doesn't have much going for him other than the fact that, yeah, he has the element of surprise on occasion and can probably swing a pipe. That's it.
Plus, too, I kind of wonder, like, maybe once, you know, the people, when they were in production of this movie, they saw who they had cast as Big Daddy and as Hit Girl, and, you know, they realized, like, okay, these guys are probably going to be awesome on screen. Mm-hmm. Maybe they did a little reworking to kind of get them in there more.
That's a possibility, and the other possibility is that they saw the character of Hit Girl, Chloe Moretz, and said, we need to make this character better because of just how shocking it's going to be for people. You know, yeah. This is going to get people to go to the movie and this
make people talk.
And make people talk, right. Mm. And that's why she was focused, you know, head-on in the trailers, and that's why she was focused head-on in the movie, because, you know, this is not your average little girl, and they had to make that clear. You know, and they did a good job of it. I'm not saying that they didn't. It's just that was probably what they thought of going into it. You know, this needs to be done. But let's talk about the casting and the directing a little bit, and then we'll move on to Iron Man 2. Like you mentioned, Aaron Johnson did a really, really good job as the main character of Dave Lazowski. But they could have gone a bunch of different ways with the character. You know, they could have gone for somebody who looks exactly like he does in the comic, which is like sort of a blonde-haired, not too muscular nerd that's a little bit shorter than what Aaron Johnson is and everything, but they went more for a guy who could I guess sort of like embody the character of Kick-Ass more than necessarily look exactly like the character of Kick-Ass, which I thought was a good idea. And they did that with the rest of the roles too. You know Nick Cage might have not looked exactly like Big Daddy, or Chloe Moretz might not have looked exactly like Hit Girl, but they didn't really care too much about that. And certain comic book movies have gone the other direction. You know, they've gone for people that look exactly like the character over the acting. And I feel that this movie definitely did acting over looks when it comes to
that. Are you talking about Fantastic Four?
Why, yes. Yes, I am, as an example.
Yeah, right.
Gee, how'd you guess?
Jessica Alba as Invisible Woman, exactly like Sue Storm.
Yeah. Yeah, no. And I mean, they have Captain America in that movie, so come on. But with this one, it was definitely acting over looks. You guys agree with that?
Yes, I think it made the film stronger for it.
Yeah, I totally agree.
I think that should always be the case, acting over looks.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Yeah, yeah.
Simple as that.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And last but not least, Matthew Vaughn, who is going to be the director of the next X-Men First Class movie. Is he going to avoid the superhero slump, as it were? Like, I mean, is he going to avoid being stuck in superhero movies? Because, I mean, think of Mr. Bryan Singer as a perfect example. You know, he did the X-Men movies, he goes out there and does Superman, absolutely. In most people's eyes, flops, you know, except for the three people who still love it. Raph fully agrees. After what I mean, we've joked about this a couple times, but it's actually true. He watched it about 8 times and then hated it. You know, it took him seeing it like, you know, 5 or 6 times to actually realize just the flaws of the movie. I mean, it's sad that it took him 6 times, but whatever. I saw it like 3 times myself, and by the 3rd time, I could barely watch it. But yeah, Bryan Singer fell into that slump where he did some X-Men movies, then did a Superman movie, and it flopped. Now here we are with Matthew Vaughn doing Kick-Ass. He's going to be doing Kick-Ass 2, Balls to the Wall in 2012. He's also going to be doing, you know, this X-Men First Class movie. Should he be avoiding superhero movies, or is this a good idea for his career? I don't know.
As long as he keeps making good ones, I don't think it's a bad idea. I mean, Bryan Singer made two good superhero movies, one really mediocre one, and then he made Valkyrie, which was all in all was a good film. So I think it's as long as you're finding projects that keep you interested, I think that's the biggest thing.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, too, I don't think it's a bad decision for Vaughn to stick around with the superhero genre thing because, I mean, it's successful right now itself.
He did a good job on this one, so what's to say he wouldn't do one on the next one?
I mean, he might do a nice job on the next one. As long as it keeps working for him, keep going for it. I mean, people are going to want superhero movies, you know, at least for the time being, so I'm sure he'll be able to get a couple jobs out of it. I say it's a smart decision for now. But eventually, yeah, I wouldn't mind seeing him do something else.
Yeah, you know, I mean, I'm looking forward to seeing what he's going to do with the X-Men franchise. I mean, the only person that's actually been announced for the movie so far is Mr. Wanted himself playing the role of Professor Xavier, which is a little weird.
That one kind of shocked me. I'm like, really?
Well, okay. I'm wondering how long he's going to be playing Professor Xavier in the movie because, I know that they're trying to say that this is going to be in continuity with the X-Men movies, but we've already seen young Professor Xavier, and he still looks like Patrick Stewart.
I didn't like the way they did that in that movie. I'm glad they're just casting an actor, and if they shave his head, they shave his head, they shave his head. So, big deal.
Well, no. I'm not saying that I'm not okay with him playing, you know, Professor Xavier. It's just that I'm not quite sure if I'm okay with his age. That's sort of what I'm saying.
How old is James McAvoy?
I'm gonna look it up right now. It's just he doesn't look like.
He doesn't look. He looks like he's in his 20s, but he's probably at least 30.
Let me look him up right now.
That's the problem with most actors nowadays, that they are older and then they play them in such young roles like this Dave Johnson. He's not 17. He's like. You know, he's like our age, 25, 26, 27, and he's playing a 17-year-old. I mean, look at Tom Welling is like 34 or something like that, and he's still playing like a 22-year-old. So it's kind of ridiculous.
Yeah. April 21st, 1979. So he's 31.
Yeah. So, I mean, he's 31-year-old. He's going to play somebody a little bit older. You know, God bless him. Finally get into those roles so that you're not. You know, that's the thing I hate about Hollywood is the most is they get these older people to play younger actors. And then when they want to do something that's more their age type, their age range, then people are like, well, he's a little young, isn't he? No, he's not. He's fucking 31 years old. Come on.
Yeah, you got a point. Well, and that's what Hollywood is all about. It's the baby faces, you know, guys that you can probably cast as 20 until they're 35. You know, because that's a way to keep the money flowing. You know, somebody that you can still feels that. I mean, come on, if you look at Glee right now, you know, I watch that show on a regular basis, but there is one teenager on that entire show. Everybody else is 23. You know, and they're all playing like 17-year-olds.
You're not going to find that many 17-year-olds who can act. So, I mean, it's a battle.
Yeah, yeah. And then it's a good thing that we found Chloe Moretz. That's where I'll leave it, you know. She's 13 now, and she can out-act a lot of 23-year-olds. So, victory to her, I guess.
Victory!
All right, we want to give it a quick number rating, or we want to just skip that entirely? Kick ass.
Go ahead.
All right, I'll give it a 4 out of 5. I think it did a good enough job for me to really be looking forward to the second one and wanting to probably own it on DVD or at this point Blu-ray.
Oh, I'll agree with you. I'll give it a 4 out of 5.
Cool.
I'd give it a 3.5, maybe a 3. I was entertained for the most part. I had a lot of fun with it, but I thought there were some problems here and there with what it was going for, and that kind of just took me out of it in the end. But just
I'm a cookie.
Not bad, not bad. I enjoyed it.
Is it an own or a rent?
I would probably just Netflix it. Okay. I don't think I'd own it. But, you know, that's not saying much because I don't buy a lot of movies anyway. So.
Right.
Once I see them, I've seen them.
Now that I have a Blu-ray player, I need my Blu-ray. My precious. What? Come on. I just watched Rocky on Blu-ray the other day.
That must have been amazing.
Dude, it was kick-ass.
I was being sarcastic.
I've never seen that.
You never seen Rocky?
I've never seen Rocky. I've never seen Top Gun. And
I've never seen Terminator.
Shit for not seeing. Oh.
Wow. Yeah, so, dude. Yeah. Well, you know what? Neither had I until Raph brought over like all of his Terminator movies, and we wound up watching them in like a marathon right before Terminator 4 came out. So I'm sort of in this in a similar boat to you. I mean, I just watched Terminator 4 the other day, and it was okay. I mean, it's better than T3, I'll say that.
But, yes, very much.
Doesn't really take much to be better than T3.
Just get rid of Christina Loken right there, gives you a whole another star.
Yeah, right. But
I mean, look where her career turned out. Ooh, the bowl movies.
God.
Blood Rain.
You had to say the word "you bowl" on this episode.
That's who I hope never gets a comic book movie.
Oh, dear.
Oh, God.
Oh. Well, you know how much money he makes off of these, you know, bad video game movies that he makes?
How much?
A lot.
Because video game fans probably want to see them.
Yeah. Well he makes them for dirt-ass cheap and then gets all the residuals. You know, I mean, like didn't he make Postal? Was that him?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Like I didn't see that.
Postal, I'm sure, cost about as much as a postage stamp to make. Yeah.
It's pretty expensive right now, postage stamps. They keep going up.
Yeah. So it costs 36 cents. I mean, so what, you know? So the movie cost 36 cents to make, right, and I'm sure he made a couple mil. Oh dear. But what the hell was I going to say? Oh yeah, no Rocky in HD is actually sort of worth it. Because they fixed all the film grain and everything, so it looks, you know, good as new, digital and everything. And actually watching the punches and stuff and the blood in Blu-ray, you actually got to see a lot more features than you would expect. And it's a good movie. All right.
And you get to hear, "Yo, Adrian."
I speak English. I don't know. Just give me a drink. Whoa, that's brisk, baby.
Okay.
All right, you took that far.
Well, come on. I used to love that Lipton Brisk commercial back in the day.
Those were awesome, the Claymation commercials.
Oh, dude, yeah, those were great. Those were fantastic. All right, moving on to Iron Man 2. The first one had absolutely no script, and it was almost entirely improv. The second one had a script and had less improv, but did it succeed?
We're going to disagree here. I'm feeling it.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Well, all right.
I'm feeling some resentment.
Iron Man 1, I give a 6 out of 5. It was better than my expectations.
No.
I loved that movie.
I'm with you, Ian.
Yeah, all right.
Preach it, brother.
We're on. You'll have your moment to talk, Alec, all right? Let me get my words out, all right?
Go for it.
All right. I wasn't expecting anything when it came out. Like, I saw Robert Downey Jr. as the main character, and I'm like, wait, Robert Downey Jr., really? But then after I thought about it for a while, I'm like, okay, this is a perfect role for Robert Downey Jr. because he's a drunk playing a drunk. It's going to work. It's great. And when I saw the movie, yeah, expectations were blown out of the water. I loved it, and I was happy with it, absolutely happy with it. Almost every single thing worked for me. The special effects were great. The characters were great. Even Pepper Potts surprised the hell out of me because I was not expecting much going into that movie, and she, you know, she played a well enough role. It was good. And that last scene, you know, nobody was expecting that when it first happened. You know, Sam Jackson coming out and talking about the Avengers Initiative. At the time, we didn't expect it. And that's what was great about it. And, not too many characters in the first one. You know, you didn't feel like you were being overblown, and in the end it worked. Okay, with Iron Man 2, here was the plot of Iron Man. Okay, the plot of Iron Man was, Tony Stark has to sort of make up for his father's, you know, misdoings, his wrongdoings in the past, and he has to fight a dude in armor. In Iron Man 2, he has to make up for his father's wrongdoings, and he has to fight a dude in armor. You know, it was almost the exact same plot with a couple of differences here and there. I mean, yeah, there was the blood poisoning and stuff like that, but it was Iron Man. Right. It literally was Iron Man 2 because there were two of them in this one. You know, that was the main difference, is that you actually had Rhodey put on the suit and be War Machine, and you had that plot going and whatever. But if the first one was a 6 out of 5 for me, I mean, I'm giving my rating right off the bat here because I want to just talk about the movie after this, but it was a 4 out of 5, the second one. You know, I'm not saying it was a bad movie. I'm just saying it was more of the same.
You know? All right. I'm not going to disagree with you so much then.
All right. Well,
maybe on the first film. But
oh, okay. Well, the floor is yours.
Oh, well. I would disagree on the first one because I think the first movie was more than kind of you just said. Granted, you know, you don't have a lot of actual Iron Man action in it, you know, throughout the whole movie. But I just think the first one's so great because I mentioned it earlier when we were talking about comic book villains in the movies and them being more interesting than the actual heroes. In the first one, I just love watching Downey Jr. as Tony Stark and Stark. And I kind of love the arc that he goes through in the first movie. I mean, he kind of starts out as, you know, the arms dealer, and he, you know, he's all about making profit off of war, and he has no problem with that. And you know, he's a snarky celebrity.
Yeah.
But then, you know, because of the accident, what he goes through, at the end, Tony Stark kind of becomes the, you know, the guy, really kind of something I think a lot of people think about, you know, what if you did have all that money and all that power? What could you do? You know, what if you were on top of the world? Would you really work to make some changes? And that's kind of what Tony Stark becomes at the end of that movie. You know, he becomes Iron Man, not just to be his cool superhero or whatever, but to really kind of make change in the world and, you know, promote peace and such. And that's what he is. Mm-hmm. And I thought the way that was handled in the first movie and the way the movie's put together and just the acting and everything, like, I just thought they got that story across so well, and it was done so well. And I thought it was just the reason I love that movie, and it's, you know, I've watched it recently. It's not like I'm just kind of remembering it when it first came out and everything. Like, I just saw it here 2 weeks ago or whatnot.
Okay.
You know, the reason I really enjoy it is that it wasn't really a typical superhero movie. It wasn't just kind of like, you know, I want to see what the Green Goblin looks like when he's brought to life and he's fighting Spider-Man and it's kind of cool and everything. This one was actually like, the first Iron Man movie is really kind of just a character piece. When you really kind of break it down, you take away all the flash and flare. It's really just about a character kind of in a certain position and what he's going to do and what he learns from it. And I don't know. I just thought that was so ballsy of them kind of to do with the first one. Granted, I mean, in the structure of the movie, it's not all that experimenting. It's very kind of just a packaged movie put together. But what's inside the package, I thought, was really sort of testing. And then in the second one, I love, like, the first, like, 40 minutes of it because it kind of just picks up right on what they left in the first Iron Man, of him kind of promoting the peace and being all about that and being that guy. But I just felt like somewhere in the middle, this second one just got really lost and kind of jumbled, and it just got boring, I thought. I mean, I understand they were kind of experimenting with some different things and trying some different techniques and stuff, what they were doing, but it just, I don't know, I got really bored in the middle. Like, the scene, and I'm sure we'll talk about it, where he's at the party and he's drunk and he's in the suit, like, what was the, I guess I understand kind of what the point was of it, but they just took it too far. I just thought that was a ridiculous scene. I thought it was dumb. A lot of, like, I think they played a lot to a lot of the cliches in the second one, like a lot of the superhero movie convention cliches, like, let's have some gags in here and gags in there. And, you know, I mean, it was kind of in the first one, but they took it way too far in the second one. And I don't know, I just didn't really enjoy the second one all that much. And Rhodey, too. I don't think Rhodey should have been in the second one whatsoever, because I thought he really didn't serve any purpose.
No, I don't agree with that.
I really didn't like him in the second one. I like him. I like Terrence Howard as Rhodey in the first one. And nothing against Don Cheadle. I think he, like, played what he could well, but I just didn't see Rhodey's point in the second one.
Well, Rhodey's point in the second one is to be everything that Tony Stark isn't. You know, a guy who's still loyal to the military, a guy who wants to use the Iron Man weapon as exactly what his name is, as a war machine. You know, he wants to be able to use it in battle, in combat. And that's not what Tony wants the Iron Man suit to be, you know, because he says so himself in the movie a couple times that, you know, he is the world's best line of defense. And Rhodey doesn't want it to be defense. He wants it to be offense. And that's his main thing. That's why he, you know, takes the Iron Man suit in the first place, is because he wants that. And yeah, Tony's going through this, you know, this major dejection in the movie because, you know, he feels like his life is this close to being over. So yeah, he's in the dregs of close to alcoholism, and he doesn't know what to do with the rest of his life. Until eventually he gets saved and finds a purpose again, and you know, his chess piece goes from circle to triangle, you know.
that was the big change of this entire movie.
Right. That and he, and I don't know if he's still drinking chlorophyll, but you know, the important thing in this is that that's what for me, Rhodey was. He was the war guy while Iron Man was the peace guy. That's why I felt like he needed to be in this movie. Brent, let me get your take on Iron Man 2, and if you want to throw in there about Rhodey 2, you can go ahead and do that. Brent? Again? It's been a while.
I'm here.
Okay.
I was chewing.
Go ahead.
I like the first one a lot. I'll agree with you, Ian, 6 out of 5, because it totally surpassed my expectations, just with the quality of the film.
Yeah.
Honestly, I didn't know if Jon Favreau could do a superhero movie, but you know, he pulled it off really well. I wouldn't go as far as saying he should be directing the Avengers or anything like that. But I would prefer him over Joss Whedon, but that's another topic whatsoever. But definitely as a quality director and a first-time action director, he did a fantastic job. The second one, I would have to give it 3 out of 5. It was good. It was entertaining for what it was. But it did not surpass the first one, which is kind of weird because, you know, most of the Marvel movies or all of the comic book movies in the past 10 years, the second one has surpassed the first one. I mean, X-Men 2 over X-Men 1, duh.
Yeah.
Spider-Man 2 over Spider-Man 1, arguable.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Dark Knight over Batman Begins, hell yeah. You know, even I would go to say Fantastic Four, Rise of the Silver Surfer over the first one. Yeah, I think so. you know, and it,
So
this one was a little weird that it didn't absolutely surpass the first one. It almost came up to that level, but then again, it fell short. And I think a lot of that had to do with, you know, like you guys were saying, there really wasn't a character arc for Tony Stark as much as there was in the first film.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, you were right, Ian. The first film, he was an alcoholic. He was near alcoholism. He was just down in the dumps and then finds a purpose for something and kind of gets re-energized as being an inventor and stuff like that. And in this one, yeah, I can kind of see why there is no character arc, because it does take place exactly – you know, almost exactly after he comes out as Iron Man. I think it would have been better for them to put it a little bit past that, you know, maybe like a year or two after he announced he was Iron Man. But 6 months, I mean, good God, that's almost the same. He's in the exact same place we left him off in the first film.
Right.
But the character arc wasn't really there. It was more of a battle with his biology, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But as far as his character growing at all, I don't think it really did. He still kissed Pepper at the end. Which they did in the other movie. You know, it wasn't like he came to any huge self-realization or anything like that.
Well, I would have been perfectly okay with them not kissing again, because I'm sort of happier with the Pepper Potts Tony Stark relationship just being best friends. I actually kind of don't want to see it as a relationship, and I sort of hope it doesn't go there. That was just a, you know, a one-off kiss, because I don't like them as a couple. I'll just straight out say it, because they aren't that in the comics. I mean, even if they slept together a couple times, they've never actually been in the relationship. You know, I'm kind of hoping that they vie away from that in the movies.
Mm-hmm. But talking about the villains for the second, I mean, one thing I think fell short for this film is that, I mean, yeah, we had War Machine, which was awesome. I will give that to them, that I enjoyed seeing War Machine on the big screen so soon after we saw Iron Man, because they had that hint in the first one, and that was just I can't wait for that moment. But I'm glad it didn't make us wait 2 or 3 more films down the line for that to happen. Just, you know, the technology's out there, people are using it, and I liked how they acquired that, you know, because it actually gave something new for Rhodey to do, rather than just be the, you know, the communications guy on the cell phone like he was in the last film.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he was standing up for Tony. He had to appear in front of the Senate, which I liked how they handled that. And
yeah,
him going, you know, you're taking my comments out of context here. You know, I really enjoyed the kind of battle Rhodey had to deal with himself, his inner battle, as far as, you know, why am I standing up for this guy? He doesn't appreciate me, but at the same time, he's my friend. So I thought that was cool, and I liked Don Cheadle. I mean, Don Cheadle, Terrence Howard, I think they both could have done really well in this movie. So it didn't really matter to me who was playing Rhodey. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and Don Cheadle can still be funny. You know,
absolutely.
Yeah.
I mean, just look to any of the Ocean's 11 movies for that. He's hilarious in those films. So, but as far as the villains go, Sam Rockwell did an awesome job as Matt Fraction. No, but he was really entertaining and he was really funny, and I kind of dug that you could see that he had like the spray tan on his hands. He had like the orange hands. Yeah. I'm like, is he a spray tan?
Yeah.
I mean, but that did not come across was that he was trying to imitate Tony Stark. I don't think that came across as well as it should have. Mm-hmm. That he was absolutely just trying to imitate him to a fault. So that, I think that could have come across a little better. But Whiplash, I thought, was the most wasted guy in the whole film. Because you had that little scene in the beginning, you had the Monaco thing, and then the rest of the film he spends building robots and then ends up in his own suit at the very end. Surprise! And they kill him, you know, instantly. I thought the Whiplash battle should have been the main centerpiece of the, you know, the final Whiplash battle should have been the main centerpiece of the film, not the battle with all the robots.
That's one of the main faults I think this movie had, was I just think it had too much going on. Like, I think the point of the Whiplash character was just to kind of show, like, look, this is kind of the evil side of this, like, what this technology could be. This is the bad that it could do. But, like, they just had too much going on that they really couldn't focus on that as much as they probably should have.
Well, I think it was more of a – he was more of a device to push – War Machine and all these other characters into development to say that the technology had caught up to Tony Stark, that other people could create what he had created. I think that was the whole point of Whiplash, rather than, you know, Tony Stark be the only one having the suit, like he was so demonstrating in the Senate scene. They needed somebody to kind of push it there so that, you know, it kind of negates that. I mean, that was what the battle, the plot of this movie was.
I think there's nobody
that can create this technology. And you're wrong. There is someone. Now you have a challenge.
Yeah, he was proving Senator Gary Shandling correct.
Yeah. And even kind of a broader point, I just think the whole movie was kind of about, like, you know, how does Tony Stark being Iron Man, how does that kind of affect the rest of the world, and how does the world react to him, and where is his place in it? Mm-hmm. I think that's what this movie was trying to ultimately, like, look at.
Yeah, and they do I thought they did a decent job of that, you know, because like I said previously, you know, he is the defense line for the United States. But if anybody else has armor or technology anywhere near him, that defeats the whole purpose.
Yes.
So what this movie was definitely telling us is that Tony Stark isn't just Tony Stark in this. You know, he is the United States.
Yeah.
And everybody else wants to be the United States, so of course everybody is going to try and gain their own technology. They're going to try and outdo us in order to, you know, become a world power. And it's not just going to be countries, it's also going to be people, because if you piss off the wrong, you know, technology guy, if you piss off the wrong inventor, you know, like Ivan Vankel and his father, you know, this is going to lead to problems, you know, because you never know who helped you or your father on a previous project that might be able to come back and kick your ass.
And I kind of think that's why this movie had to take place, like, right after, you know, he says, you know, I am Iron Man at the end of the first one. Because, like, you know, in real life, the world is not going to wait around for a year and then kind of pick up on all this. No, the next day after he says that line, the world's going to go crazy.
Yeah.
And that's when the reaction starts. I think that I kind of liked how it just picked up like that.
Well, I like that too. In fact, I was trying to think like a little while ago just how many sequels pick up directly after the previous movie. I mean, my girlfriend and I were talking about that, and Iron Man 2 is one of the few superhero movies that does that. You know, I mean, yeah, there were the Rocky movies, because hell, I just watched them, so I know that for sure. That the, you know, Rocky 2 picks up directly after Rocky 1. Even though, you know, they have different hair and different outfits and they look like they've aged 3 years. But with this one, you know, Iron Man 2 is picking up directly after Iron Man because it had to. You're right. But it's also one of the few superhero movies that does just that. You know, I'm sure that Kick-Ass 2 isn't going to pick up directly after Kick-Ass because it doesn't really have to. You know, that's not the point of the movie. That's not the plot of the movie. With this one, the world changes because of Iron Man. You need to see the direct repercussions. So I'm perfectly okay with that. But the characters that were introduced in this movie, I want to talk about that a little bit, because, yeah, you've got Sam Rockwell as Justin Hammer, does a really good job. He's villain number one. Ivan Vanko, villain number two. Hell of a Lot of Drones, villain number three. And you've got Scarlett Johansson coming in as Natalie Rushman / Natasha Romanoff as Black Widow assisting Iron Man and S.H.I.E.L.D. So those are your main new characters here. Yeah, you've got more out of Nick Fury, but technically he was introduced in the first one, but whatever. And Senator Stern is more of a foil than anything else, but, you know, it's nice to see him. So it brings to the
Except
question...
he needs to lose some weight.
Yes, I agree.
Good God.
The
what
man
happened
had,
to you, Gary Shandling?
The man has ballooned a lot since the Larry Sanders Show. But
my co-host on Matinee Idol's pointed out, too, he's got a lot going on in his face. Got some face work done, which I thought was pretty funny. So.
Yeah, I'll agree. But it brings to the question, were there too many new characters in this? Were they trying to do too much? I mean, would it have been nearly as successful if you just had, say, for example, Vanko and Hammer, like, completely ditch Natasha Romanoff, like, entirely in this movie? Because, yeah, I know that they're trying to build her up to be in the Avengers movie or whatever, but they could have done that in other ways. Like, they could have had her show up as a S.H.I.E.L.D. agent in Thor or something like that, or in Captain America. Mm-hmm. It didn't really have to be here. But, you know, they felt mm-hmm. they needed to, because she's got that relationship with Tony Stark in the comics, so it made sense to bring her in, whatever.
I think the big agenda of the Marvel film franchise, you know, the Avengers movie that's coming out, and we're seeing all these promo pics for Captain America and Thor, which even though they're digital renditions and they don't quite look right because they're digital, I still think that the costumes are awesome.
I agree.
No, the Captain America
that,
one,
you know,
is awesome.
After,
yeah.
You can get on that after we talk about this, but which I think would be a good third topic if we finish this up quickly.
Okay.
But
mm-hmm.
But I think the biggest thing was that is their ultimate agenda, is the Avengers. So there had to be something significant in this film, more than just the nod to it we had in the last film, so that you got the general public excited about, okay, what is this Avengers? What's going on? Who are these people? You know, obviously there's something bigger going on here, rather than, you know, just another after the credits scene, I think was the main issue with the film. If they had taken that stuff out, it might have been a better film. It might have been the same film. But I think that was the biggest part of it that got confused.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I mean, I like the ending scene when they were in that, you know, the S.H.I.E.L.D. headquarters and all that stuff. But I think that's what kind of clogged the drain on the Iron Man movie. And for the record, I want to say that I did not like the fight scene with Black Widow,
okay,
because it was so heavily edited. You could tell that was not her doing her own stunts, or maybe she was doing her own stunts, but she is not a skilled martial artist.
No, she's not.
I don't think she did any training whatsoever for this film. So, I mean, I've heard people that, you know, just friends of mine or whatever, acquaintances, going, oh, that was awesome. That was the best part of the movie. Her kicking all those guys' ass. I'm like, what the fuck are you talking about? There's a lot better action in Kick-Ass than there was in that one scene because it was so heavily edited. It was like, you know, give me a fucking break, man.
No, my favorite
talent
part
and skill whatsoever, and they had to edit it so tightly that you had to – that's why they had to edit it that way, because she has no skill or talent.
No, my favorite part of that fight scene was her macing the guy as she's walking past at the end. That was my favorite
all
part.
That's Scarlett Johansson can do by herself, you know, mace the guy. So, I mean, I just want to put that out there for the record, that her fight scene was not the best part of the movie. It was not awesome. It was kind of sad.
I'd agree with you. I don't know. The Avengers stuff doesn't bug me as much. I think you could have easily – I wouldn't have mind losing Black Widow. I think that could have helped it out a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know. I think the Avengers stuff kind of goes back to, again, the whole point of the movie, like, how does the world react? And in this situation, like – you know, you're going to – I mean, we already kind of see, like, the United States government kind of going after Tony Stark. But I kind of like that the movie kind of explores, like, no, there's this even higher-up power that wants to kind of include Tony Stark in this kind of great mission,
mm-hmm.
you know, and to kind of do something even bigger with the world. It's obviously there to build the Avengers stuff. I mean, that's the main reason why it's there. But I also think it does kind of work with the story, too. I didn't think it was – I don't know. I know a lot of people, and my buddy – Joey from Matinee Idol had a big problem with that stuff, but I don't know, I think it worked in what they were trying to do with the movie.
I'm not saying it didn't work, I thought it did work, but I think that's what helped clog the movie so much.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm not saying they did it like, yeah, I agree with you. They didn't do it like perfect. They could have done it better, but
when you're trying to build character on more than say 3 or 4 new characters in a movie, it's hard to keep the main character as the main character.
Yeah.
And that's what this felt like. I mean, you know, you spent what, maybe 40 minutes of the movie on Natalie Rushman? Thereabouts?
No, not that much. No.
Okay, but 20-25 still. I mean, at least a half hour of the movie was Natalie Rushman / Natasha Romanoff.
No, I would say it's about 10 minutes total. Okay, yeah. So you have the scene with her when she first shows up in the boxing ring, and then you had the fight scene. And I would put those at about 5-6 minutes each. So not that whole amount of time. The other time she was in the movie, she was kind of inconspicuous. So, you know, maybe 15 minutes at the most.
All right, okay. But other than the scene with her and Nick Fury, that was the scene that I felt worked the best for her. In particular, when she's, you know, in the donut joint and they're going over, you know, they give him the injection to get the poisoning down a little bit. And when she sits down, she didn't really become convincing to me until that specific scene, you know, because I was hit or miss with her until then. I mean, I knew what she was going to be, you know, by hearing the IMDb credits and stuff like that, you know, like, okay, she's going to play Scarlet Witch in this, but not Scarlet Witch, Black Widow in this. But, you know, until that point, I didn't give a crap. She was just there, you know. Yeah, she was infiltrating, you know, Stark Enterprises to work there, but that didn't even really need to be. They could have just brought her in during that scene, and then yeah, if you want to still have her beat a couple people up and scissor kick them, then that's fine. But that doesn't even really need to be there either.
You know? I think it would have been just cooler, yeah, like you said, just bring her in that scene just kind of as like a quick cameo, because it would have got some people excited.
Right.
And you just kind of left it at that, you know.
Yeah, and I felt that would have actually been a lot more powerful, you know, because just like we proved in the last movie, just by having like, what, 2 minutes of Nick Fury, people were, you know, hitting the walls with, oh my God, this is the most amazing thing I've ever seen.
Yeah.
You know, the same thing could very well be said for Scarlet Witch. If you would have just, you know, had her been in one scene or two scenes,
that's Scarlet Witch.
I keep
confusing
her Black
name
Widow
with the other character.
You know why? Because I see her as Scarlet Witch. That's my fucking problem. When I saw Scarlett Johansson for the first time in this movie, I thought, my God, she'd be so much of a better Scarlet Witch than she is a Black Widow. That's what I was thinking the entire time, and it's really sad that I was thinking that, but whatever. Yeah, Black Widow. But also, here's my other problem. Her last name is Natasha Romanoff, okay? It's Romanoff. No Russian accent whatsoever.
Okay. Yeah, I was disappointed.
Because Scarlett Johansson can't do one.
Neither can Mickey Rourke.
But he at least tried.
Yes, that's the point, man. You know, they could have had at least one scene where she's talking to Vanko in Russian or something.
But he escaped. Literally right before she got there.
Oh, dear God, man. You know, that's just not cool, okay? It's not cool. She should have at least had a Russian accent or something going on.
I love the fact that she was a badass martial artist, you know, a boxer, whatever, and then she knows how to hack all the computer systems and free the drones, too. What? Just fucking shoot the thing. That's your job.
I know.
Why do you have to be a hacker? That was so lame.
And she did it Chloe O'Brien style, too. That was the part that pissed me off. She didn't touch the mouse once. Okay? She somehow was able to hack the entire system just by clicking stuff on the keyboard without using the goddamn mouse. I hate it when that happens. I hate that shit. I'm done.
Feel some pent up rage there.
Yeah, well, you know, like sometimes movies get it right, and they understand that computers don't work that way. You can't just do everything using keyboard. And yet with her, it was, you know, and you're done. You know, just like with Ivan Vanko when he hacks the hammer, you know, security.
Maybe he's using an MS-DOS prompt and you can't use the mouse.
That's true.
But there is no MS-DOS in this world. MS-DOS doesn't exist in this world. It's all Stark and basically Apple and Windows are Hammer and Stark.
Maybe Stark has his own version of MS-DOS.
All right, I'm done.
Yeah.
There you go.
All right, bastards.
Okay, so final thought about the film.
Yeah.
What was your favorite part of the film? Was it the robot fight, the peeing in the suit, or the suitcase armor?
Oh, no. Hold on. Before we even get that far, the DJ in the movie, you know he died, right?
Yeah.
So this is a much more convincing way for him to die than of a crack overdose.
Oh. Ouch.
That's cold. That is cold.
Oh man.
Well, because he just stuck around the entire time while the fight's going on. You know,
we can
just
say kind of like how he didn't get out. You know, he's still spinning his fat beats. You know, boom 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 boom.
Oh, it was beautiful. It was good times, man. But you know what? Before we get to the favorite part or whatever, let's talk just a little bit about Vanko and whether or not he deserved the big baddie role that he had in this movie. Because I mean, yeah, he's the descendant of a guy who worked with Howard Stark, and yeah, he seems to have the smarts and the technique and everything. But all he did would go whippy whip whip whip, and fight get drones to fight Iron Man, because drones are not nearly as fun as people. You know, even Hammer said that in the movie. You know, he kept saying that you know, well, why are you giving me drones? I need this to be suits. And we
trust me, drones better.
Yeah, drones better. They make
he
movie
had the
go
purpose
longer
for that, though, because he knew that the iridium or whatever was poisoning Tony Stark, so he knew that in the long term, you know, until they find something else, mm-hmm. you can't put people in these suits.
Okay, but he went in the suit.
Beats me. He knew he was. I don't know.
But because his isn't actually in his chest. He just has a power thing, like a battery almost.
Yeah, it's built true. Into the suit.
Yeah, so it's the same can be said for War Machine. I mean, War Machine's got the same thing. He's just got a battery in the suit. It's not, you know, actually in his chest as his heart. You know, he's not the Energizer Bunny.
His chest. I'm great and I got something wrong and now I'm pissed.
But all right, Ivan Vanko. Yay or nay? That's all I want to know before we can move on to other shit. All right, Ivan Vanko, yay or nay?
I like Mickey Rourke as him. I just don't think there was enough of him. I think there probably should have been a little bit. Like, I don't know. I think it would have been better if there was more of him in the movie.
It's not my bird.
Rather than just kind of exactly. But I mean, just kind of with the amount of him in there as it was, it almost kind of seems like he was a side attraction.
Yeah.
Like kind of just another distraction rather than kind of being the main bad.
Yeah.
But at the same point, I don't know if he should have been the main bad guy, because I kind of like Justin Hammer as the main bad guy. I don't know how I really feel about it. Overall, I'll just say I did like Mickey Rourke as Ivan Vanko. I didn't have a problem with him. Mm-hmm. But I don't know. What else you got?
We can probably say that Justin Hammer was behind the Newton in this world. You know, he fails miserably when it comes to technology. He's like the creative Zen Vision to the iPod of Tony Stark. You know, like seven levels behind him in technology or something. But he was good. He was good. I did enjoy Justin Hammer, and I guess I can sort of agree with you that he was more of the villain than Ivan Vanko was. But yeah. but should that have been the case? Should that have been the case, Brent?
I liked him. But I thought that he would have been a lot better if he had he would have been used a lot better if they had had more of him in there. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Does that make any sense?
No. That makes really. Sense. I mean, do you cut the drones entirely and do you just have like one giant ass fight with him?
I would have cut the drones in half. I mean, I like the idea of the drones, but I think they took up so much time of the film that when Whiplash finally showed up in his cool badass suit that we never got to see. You know, they had to cut him off because they had spent so much time on the drones. So I would have liked to have seen a more of a Whiplash, Iron Man, War Machine fight than, you know, him using the one-shot kills all or whatever they used to kill him and stuff like that. So
yeah, it kind of would have been better like if they just cut the drones and it kind of just had Justin Hammer. I mean, obviously he can't get in the suit, but he kind of sponsors his own, like, anti-Iron Man, and that would be Mickey Rourke.
Mm-hmm.
And he would just be the only threat. That, I think, probably would have worked better because you could have got more of him in there.
Well, my favorite part of this movie, by far, the ex-wife. The ex-wife bullet. That was...
Yeah, that was pretty famous.
Because, you know, I mean, Hammer's, like, pimping this thing out. Like, okay, this is the best thing I've ever made. I mean, look at the design on this thing and the smooth... And he fires it right at Vanko and it just falls to the ground and Tony just turns to him and goes... Hammer? Yeah. All right. So yeah, we'll go to what was the question that you originally asked, Brent, before I cut you off like a dumbass?
Okay. What was your favorite part? Was it pissing in the suit, suitcase armor, or the robot fight between Iron Man and the Mark II armor?
You know, I think I'm gonna have to go with suitcase armor.
Yes.
Because that was a nice nod to the comics and the animated series, and having it be Silver Centurion colored was also pretty fun. So yeah, I'm gonna go with that. And that was a better fight than the final fight.
Right. Yeah, I know. That fight should have just went longer. I think that moment just was so cool when he gets the suitcase and just. It just looked awesome, I thought. So yeah, I agree with you there, and it should have been a longer fight.
Yeah. So yeah, I choose that. You choose the same thing, Alec?
Yep.
All right. Brent.
Pissing in the armor. I thought this was pretty hilarious, but I like the suitcase suit too.
People always ask me, how do you go to the bathroom in the suit, like this?
I hated that scene. Whatever.
Oh, and another comment I want to make. Talk about characters that are in things, more than they should be. Jon Favreau, I love you, man.
Yeah.
You're my guy when it comes to these Iron Man movies. We didn't need as much Happy Hogan as we got in this movie.
I agree with you. I liked him more as just kind of the random cameo in the first one, where he really wasn't in it. But in here, he has a fight scene to himself, which was just kind of ridiculous. It just wasn't needed.
It felt like Jon Favreau was playing himself.
Yeah.
You know, and that's not what you need in a movie. I mean, self-insertion, we're trying to avoid that in movies. And that's sort of what happened here. And you could have saved, 5 minutes in a movie at least by getting rid of most of what Happy Hogan was doing.
It's like, how important is Happy Hogan anyway to the story?
Not much. He's dead in the comics.
He's not even important. He's just kind of there as Tony Stark's driver and to make a couple quick, funny comments. You don't need him, in 10 minutes scene with Pepper Potts.
But then again, if Alec Berry was the director of this movie, or if Frank Cassino was the director of this movie, or Ian Levinstein was the director of this movie, I'm sure we would have inserted ourselves.
That's what she said. Maybe. I don't know.
Insert yourself.
Oh, dear God in hell. All right, one more thing to ask about the movie, and then we'll move on to the Thor and Captain America and all that jazz. Nick Fury, the increased scenes in Nick Fury in this movie, were they the best scenes in the movie with Nick Fury? Yes or no? Nick Fury, yay.
Yay, I'll say I liked them, but not the best part of the movie.
All right, okay, but one of the best parts of the movie?
Yeah, one of the cooler parts.
Okay. Please step out of the donut.
I really liked the maps and stuff in the background of that. I thought it was awesome. If you noticed, you have to go back and watch this when it comes out on DVD or just search for screenshots on the internet. But think about, they had a little blip in the middle of the Atlantic Ocean, Atlantis, Namor. They had one in Africa, Black Panther. They have one in Europe, Latveria. They had one in the American Southwest, which I guess is Thor. I thought that was really cool. And then also at the same time, if you look closely – they had the news feed of the Incredible Hulk when he's in the campus.
Yeah.
And they have the Asian reporter and the black kids or whatever talking about that. That was in the background, too. So at the same time, it's media. Either they're reviewing that footage or that's happening at the same time. So that was pretty cool.
Asian reporter Trisha Takanawa here.
What scene was that in?
At the end where they're going over the assessment for Tony.
I didn't notice that whatsoever.
Yeah. That actually firmly places, and they've actually stated this a couple times, that Incredible Hulk takes place after Iron Man 2, timeline-wise.
Gotcha.
Yeah, which makes sense, because the Tony Stark that we see in Incredible Hulk wouldn't have been there until after Iron Man 2.
You wouldn't have had time between Iron Man 1 and 2.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yep. All right, cool. That makes sense.
Mm-hmm. So, all right. So we all gave our assessments of the movie. Although you didn't give your review.
3 stars.
Yeah. All right. I gave 4 out of 5.
2.5, 3.
Wow.
Yep.
Damn, you're the downer on this episode.
I know. I'm just bringing the whole
downer, man.
I know. Jeez. Just lighten up. Like, I loved it. There was some explosions in it.
All right. Well, we'll lighten things up with the final scene.
Julian Lytle.
Oh, Julian Lytle. No. Julian Lytle lightens things up in his own way, although it's mostly Grant Morrison related. But we'll talk about the final scene here because that'll lead into what we're talking about next. Not nearly as explosive a final scene as the last final scene in Iron Man, but we do have touchdown of the hammer, and I like the look of it. I think yeah. that's looking pretty nice there, I gotta say.
Mm-hmm.
It looks exactly like it's normally looks, so there wasn't really much to not like.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And the scene itself was, and the scene itself made sense. You know, have the agent Agent Coulson go out there and investigate this giant hammer that just fell from the sky.
So. Yes.
It's because that's an everyday thing.
Oh, of course. Yeah. It just happened to me yesterday, actually. I was walking down the street in some Brooklyn, and there was a giant hammer, and then I got raped.
Rape.
All right, so we got the look of Thor in the Thor movie as played by Papa Kirk and
Chris Hemsworth,
and it looks a lot like his current look in the comics.
Yeah,
I'm okay with that.
I am too. Got no problem.
Well, and they had choices here. You know, there were multiple.
Did you hear the Spanish maids yelling? Is that why you're giggling?
No.
The Spanish maids are yelling. Me, you didn't hear them?
No. No, I didn't. I didn't hear them.
No.
No. No.
Where's the paperboard?
That's what you sound like.
No. No. Mr. Superman, no here. No. I have no money. No. But, yeah, I mean, they had multiple choices to go for with Thor. They could have gone old school with the wings and everything. They could have gone, you know, his armor that he wore during the Jurgens years, you know, or they could have gone current. And I'm happy that they went current because the look that he has is like a combination of Ultimate Thor and the current Coipel look. And I think that's the most realistic looking Thor that we've quite possibly ever seen because he's Thor. He's a thunder god.
Yes, I really like the Thor movie costume. I think it works. And I know that we'll put a disclaimer for those of you who are not digging it because it looks kind of, you know, digital. That's because it is a digital artist rendering of the costume.
Yeah.
But just from a costume standpoint, to see that on film, I think it's going to work really great. And I especially love the little touches of red around the gauntlets, you know, to kind of signify his old wristbands that he had in the classic costume and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And there's a little bit of red on the boots on that picture. I linked all of these pictures in our chat message. You guys can kind of look at what we're looking at pretty easily just for easy access, so yeah. Pull those up.
Yeah, and we'll definitely put links in either the show notes or on the forums once we're done with this episode.
Yes.
Yeah. But
I thought it works great. Mjolnir glowing, works for me. I can dig it.
Yeah, that's fine. I mean,
where's lightning gonna come from, you know? Just say it comes from Mjolnir.
Mjolnir.
Or Mjolnir. I'm kind of wondering what they're going to pronounce it as.
I hope it's Mjolnir, because if they keep saying Mjolnir in the movie, it's just going to sound so
stupid.
Can't
help but laugh.
My
power comes from Mjolnir, you know?
They might as well call it Joey.
Joey.
Hey, Joey!
Hey, Joey Wheeler, how you doing? Yeah, forget about it.
That would be awesome.
But yeah, Alec, you're cool with the costume. You like the little touches.
Yeah, I like the way they're kind of incorporating the current look with it. I mean, you might as well keep it that way, because if you have any crossover from the movies or the comics, it's something familiar. And I don't know, I just like the design. I think it's gonna look cool, and I can't wait to actually kind of see it in action.
Yeah, and chainmail.
And it's a lot better than the Thor they had in the Hulk TV show.
No shit.
Just look at that picture and go. You could have that with the fuzzy animal hair. And the wings on the kind of look silly, or you could have what we got now. That or that. That, and just kind of flip between tabs on your browser saying, is that or that?
Hey. Although nothing is nearly as bad as the Daredevil from the Hulk.
Yeah.
That was pretty
Black
bad.
Ninja. That's it. What about the beard and the lack of a helmet? I mean, so far, there might be a helmet. He might put it on at one point, but I don't think it's going to be an integral part of the costume. And I can dig that.
Well, lack of a helmet.
The helmet, I don't think it's going to be – I don't think it would work on screen. I'll put it that way.
Well, lack of a helmet – well, like I said, this is a joining of the Ultimate look and the current comic book look. I mean, you've got the chainmail of the current look. You've got the like belt-like thing of the Ultimate look. So, and you've got no helmet like the Ultimate look. So I'm okay with that. The beard too is the ultimate appearance of Thor. So I'm okay with that.
I think it just makes sense.
Digging the beard.
Yeah, and I think it just kind of makes sense because these guys are supposed to be gods. They're actually living beings. Like, you're not gonna wear a helmet all the time. But like, you know, I can see him wearing this like day to day, walking around Asgard.
Well, okay, but here's my major question here, and hopefully it'll look less fake once the actual movie comes out. But cape, yay or nay?
Yay.
Yeah?
Maybe it comes off. Maybe that's a purely regal thing, but, you know, I'm sure he'll lose it at some point during the film because, you know, just whatever. Everybody seems to lose their cape.
Well, he doesn't want to wind up, like, stuck in any airplane propellers or anything.
Right, but he's fucking Thor. He's just going to, like, flick it and it's going to go...
Thor doesn't need airplanes.
Yeah, Thor flies.
Or flies.
I want to see him twirl his hammer. That's what I want to see him do.
Yes. And
twirl it as he lands, you know.
And I want to see at least one instance of Kane turning into hammer.
Oh, yeah.
Yes, that would be nice. But, yeah, I kind of would be okay without the cape. It looks really, really fake right now. So hopefully it'll look better once the actual...
It's purely digital, my friend.
I know.
It's all digital.
So meanwhile, talking about Captain America, it's nice to see that they're keeping the look of the you know, 80s cap in this new Captain America. That you know, it's all gonna be, you know, foam rubber, and he's gonna be played by
No, that's the Matt Salinger cap.
Oh, okay, all right, gotcha. Yeah. Oh yeah, and now that I look at it, I like that a lot better. Yeah.
So
good.
look at Matt Salinger cap. That's what we could have gotten with direct translation. And then look at what we are getting for the 2000s. I think it's a much better improvement.
Yeah, I would agree. Number one, it looks like something a soldier would wear.
Yeah. I don't know. I think this cap one looks awesome. I like the cap one a lot more than the Thor one. I just get more excited about it. Yeah, like you said, I like how it actually looks like applicable to like a battlefield.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It just looks awesome to me.
Yeah, and if you wear a helmet, you don't realize that it's Chris Evans nearly as much.
Yeah, exactly.
You know what, though? That digital rendering of Chris Evans in that helmet kind of looks okay.
Yeah.
I'm kind of okay with it. Before, I was kind of like, really, Chris Evans? But, I mean, with the way they made him stand here, it looks pretty good. So,
yeah.
We'll see.
You know, we'll see once the movie comes out, whether it's a convincing cap or not. But, yeah, this does look pretty good. And I like how the suspenders are the stripes. You know,
I can dig that, but functionally, I don't know what the fuck they do. I mean, maybe they, I think maybe they're there to hold on his shoulder pads.
Mm-hmm.
Because I'm just kind of picturing as, like, he has the tunic with, you know, maybe it's just a plain white tunic. And then he puts on the shoulder pad, you know, the chest piece with the star or whatever. And that's what's kind of holding it down. But it just doesn't make sense that, that it only covers like half of his chest, if that's going to be the way it is. But I mean, that's nitpicking, but it as for the costume, it looks pretty good.
That could also be the where, like, what's holding on the back pouch that he's eventually going to put the shield on.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And I'm really digging the non-red boots and gloves. I'm really digging the brown. I do not want red boots and red gloves.
I agree.
No swashbuckler boots, but they do kind of have that with the whole, you know, the little fold over on the top there on his boots.
Mm-hmm.
And I have that kind of a hearkening back to that.
Well, and this is actually pretty similar to Brian Hitch's ultimate costume, and a little bit also to the redesign of the World War II costume that Brian Hitch did for Captain America Reborn. You know, this isn't too far from that. So I guess they are yet again going from multiple, you know, iterations of the comic book, and I'm fine with that. If it works in the movie, then that's great, you know.
Do you think this is going to be his World War II costume?
I think so.
Because I think that movie's taking place entirely in World War II.
Yeah.
So, but in a World War II world, does this work is my biggest thing. In the modern day world, I think it does. But in a World War II world, I don't know if it does.
I think if you dirty it up a little bit, you don't make it as shiny. You know what I mean? Like I think it could work.
I would say so too. Yeah. It looks like a war uniform. That's it. You know, it happens to have a star on it because this is the star of the United States Army right now.
Yeah.
You know, so I'm okay with this being that. And like Alex said, don't shiny it up nearly as much and put a little grit and grime on it and you're good to go.
Yep.
Yeah.
It also kind of got the Winter Soldier thing going on with the stars on the arms.
I was just
gonna
say, yeah. Yeah, and also that one of them is white and the other one is blue because that's almost exactly what Winter Soldier has.
No.
Yeah. No, I'm talking about the arms.
No, they're both white stars encased in red.
That's not what I'm talking about. The coloring of the sleeves on the arms. One of them is white and one of them is blue, just like on
Winter Soldier. No, I think that's just the lighting, my friend.
Yeah.
Yes.
Huh. Okay, never mind. Looks like it to me, but I guess not. But, yeah, and for that matter, would you guys be okay with this being just the outfit? Like if he just keeps this in the Avengers also?
If he keeps this modern day, I'd totally be fine with it.
Yeah, I don't have a problem with it.
All right, cool. And last but not least, Joss Whedon directing the Avengers.
No!
Why?
I do not want Eliza Dushku in my fucking Avengers movie. No, can't act.
But it'll be great though. Nathan Fillion will play will play Ant-Man and and we'll get.
I don't want Alan Tudyk as Jarvis.
Why not?
Or anything else for that matter.
I think he's gonna shy away from using his regular actors.
Yeah, right.
Especially with the deal he's got going on with all these other actors already playing the characters. You know, like I don't think he's going to be forcing his own people in there.
Actually, Alan Tudyk is going to be recast as the Hulk.
Yeah, Edward Norton won't show up. Yeah. He'll need somebody.
You won't like me when I'm angry.
You know what? That's the biggest bone I have with Edward Norton, that he has such a bad attitude about being in the Avengers movie. He's like, well, if you want me in the Avengers movie, speak up. Of course we fucking want you in the Avengers movie. You're in the Hulk movie. Come on.
He has
such a bad attitude about being in this movie because he never does sequels or anything. But, I mean, come on, dude. Are you really going to turn down that paycheck or the idea that, you know, you could be in multiple films and become a bigger name? Because Ed Norton right now isn't really anything to he's not anything to laugh at, but he's not the biggest star in the world.
Ed Norton doesn't need your paycheck. Ed Norton is Ed Norton, and Ed Norton can do whatever he wants.
But that's the thing that bugs me the most about him is that he did this one movie and then he's like, okay, I'm done. But really, you know, what did you sign on to? You know, dude, just mm-hmm. own up to it and play along with everybody else, I think, is the biggest thing.
Yeah, and there might still be a second Hulk movie eventually because they did mention that like once Avengers comes out, if it does well, then they're going to probably do Incredible Hulk 2.
I hope so.
Yeah.
But I think in order for them to do Incredible Hulk 2, he's got to be in that Avengers movie.
Yeah. You're right. And whether he's the villain or whether he's a member of the team, you know, we'll wait and see. Or maybe he'll do both. Maybe they'll actually do the origin of the Avengers, you know, where they're fighting him and Loki's involved and that.
I'd like to see them just like all these characters just kind of come together to take down the Hulk, and that's how they become the Avengers.
Yeah,
That would be cool.
I'd be fine.
Yeah, I think that worked really well in Ultimates. I think it'll work really well in film.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I mean, rumor has it though that the Skrulls are going to be the villain in the Avengers. I don't know. That's too early in my opinion.
Yeah. It's a lot to introduce.
Yeah.
In that, you know.
Yeah, no, I hear you. Especially like, and I know that they're not, you know, a Marvel property at this point, movie wise. But I mean, to me, Fantastic Four has always screamed Skrulls. You know, yeah. I mean, I know that Secret Invasion and even Ultimates had Skrulls or Skrull-like things being the villains, but I would introduce them there first. Like, if Marvel ever gets back to Fantastic Four, I'd put them in there. And then have them be the villains in an Avengers movie. That makes sense to me. I don't know. What do you guys think?
I could agree. I just, you know, again, I don't think they should be worrying about introducing too much stuff in this Avengers movie, because you're already going to have the idea of trying to put all these characters together.
Right.
And then if they introduce guys like Hawkeye and Ant-Man and such, they have to introduce them.
Mm-hmm.
So I think the villain, your threat, should be something that's kind of already known to your audience, rather than like we have to explain the entire Skrull race and the planet they come from and all that,
yeah,
the whole rules of what they do. It'd kind of be better just to have the Hulk in it, because everybody understands what the Hulk does.
Yeah, and then Skrulls will basically become like the drones in Iron Man 2. You know, they won't actually have any personality to them. They'll just be drones, pretty much.
Yeah.
So, oh well. All right, I think that pretty much wraps it up here, and that is that. So, before we do, hey, Alec, what is coming up on your multiple podcasts?
Teenage Wasteland, I've just been putting out whenever I haven't thought or want to review something. There's not a really consistent schedule there.
Mm-hmm.
It's really just, you know, my solo
show.
Sounds
familiar.
Gee, yeah, I have no idea what you're talking about. What day of June is it right now, and 108's not out? Okay.
That'll work for your listeners, then, and they understand.
I was talking about BK's Bullets.
If
you want to make that point to the audience that you're late on editing all the time, that's fine.
Shut up. All right, continue.
Yeah, but nothing really specific coming up on TW. If you're just interested in reviews, or if I have a rant or something, you might want to check that show out. Just, again, all from single hosts, nothing too elaborate. But Matinee Idols, we have a couple different movie discussions coming up. We'll have our Marty episode released soon, which was a movie that came out in like 1955. Actually, a really good movie. It's interesting. Then we're going to be doing a Jurassic Park feature episode. So if you like JP, you might be wanting to check out Matinee Idols. Then also at our website, matineeidols.com, we update daily with a lot of articles and written reviews. So there's a lot to check out there. So if you like movies, you might as well check out MI.
And that's IDLES, right?
Yep.
Okay, cool. Not IDOLS.
Yeah, we went a little off.
Real quickly, Jurassic Park 3, yes or no?
No.
I haven't actually seen it, so I can't really say.
I love the first two, but the third one I was just kind of like, eh.
But just like Terminator.
Just like Terminator, which I haven't seen, though, so I don't know.
Yeah, you'll see it eventually. And Brent, anything upcoming? Anything?
No.
Okay, cool. Well, an upcoming on this show, whatever the hell we feel like it, because I really...
Actually, we've got a bunch of Review Corner books we need to do, because we got a shipment coming this week, and we got the last one. We got a shit ton of books to review, so...
Yeah, and I haven't even decided...
Probably be the next episode.
Yeah, probably. And I haven't even decided what this month's Review Corners are yet, because DCBS didn't get back to us when they were supposed to, so we gotta figure that out and just pick them randomly or something, but... I'll figure it out. All right, and that is that. So, Alec, first off, thanks for joining us in Comic Timing, man, and don't be a stranger.
Yeah, I had a good time with you guys. About time I got on here. Had a good time.
I'd say so.
Thank you for the invite. Appreciate it.
Don't worry about it. Pleasure.
Only took us 2 weeks.
It only lasts forever.
That's all right. Like I said, at least Iron Man 3 isn't out yet.
Exactly.
And Brent, thanks for joining us, and enjoy your night.
Yeah, thanks. I gotta go to work now.
Well, the email address for Comic Timing is comictiming@gmail.com. Don't forget to check out the forums over at thecomicforums.com. Graciously hosted by Comic Geek Speak guys over at comicgeekspeak.com. And Peter Rios still doesn't want to kick ass. Don't forget to check out the Comic Podcast Network over at comicpodcast.com and the League of Comic Book Podcasts over at comicbooknoise.com/league. And please send us your iTunes reviews on iTunes. That would be graciously appreciated. So once again, for Alec and for Brent, I'm Ian Levesey, and reminding everybody out that there's always time for comics, and please do not pee in your iron suit. On a high note, or a low note, or a soft note. Oh, man. All right, Alec. Thanks for joining us, man.
Yeah, man. I had a good time. Anytime you need any extra voices, I'm always here.
I, It sounds good to me, man.
All right.
And Brent, survive, man, survive.
Survival of the fittest, baby.
How long are you out there?
Till the 19th.
Damn.
Day 3.
Holy shit. You should just be putting together an audio blog, like, this is day 3 of my... things are looking dark. That's because it's 3 a.m. and I don't know where I am.
Just getting out of work and everybody's off the road.
You could do, like, a voiceover, like, Frank Miller style. Like,
his own Rorschach journal.
Fucking Batman.
The roads are dark. The roads are dark and damp like my soul.
I think you should do it Rorschach journal style.
Oh, dude. Yeah. Frank Casinas journal.
June 17th. Dog carcass in the back of the alley. I'm tired.
Don't know how that got there, but that's my dinner tonight.
Just gotta finish building this plane.
Gotta make sure there's no snakes on it. Motherfucker! That's the one thing that that Kick-Ass was missing, man. It needed something like in Wanted, you know, have somebody go shoot this motherfucker.
Yeah, they needed something like that.
All right, guys, you have a good rest of the day.
Wait!
What's up? What do you got?
Where to go?
You know what? You don't want to go?
Wait.
Why is it not working?
What are you trying to do?
He's looking for that Batman form.
Oh.
No, it's just nice. Fucking...
Nah, you're...
Like it's gonna be one girl only, that'd be pretty boring.
Na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na, bat form. Oh, man.